We're talking now with Travis Thompson. He is a candidate for Idaho Legislative District 1 State Representative, comma, CA. It's a long title. Travis, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let's start out with an introduction. Tell us a bit about your background, how long you've been in Bonner County, anything you want to mention about your professional qualifications, family. Open mic.
Yeah, okay. So I was born in Bonner County, just not too far from here in the old Bonner General Hospital. Mm-hmm. So I'm 49, so I've lived here my whole life. I've worked out of state on and off when the market wasn't so good. So I've been in more states than I haven't. I've actually almost been in all of the states. So I've got a really good idea of what it's like around the country. And that's what I really like about this. Every time I come back, I know this is home. So, but this has always been my home. I've never moved somewhere, just been traveling. So I have three children. They're now young adults. And so that was a great joy to be a part of their life and get them raised. Well, I'm still a part of their life, but, you know, yeah. Not just a little bit different role.
Yeah,
so that's
once
really
they get
important.
Older, yeah.
Yeah, my family's been here. So my grandfather, Pete, actually started the Daily Bee. So he's was involved in politics, and I was always kind of interested in that. And So I've been donating time to different organizations and community stuff, helping people understand how to interact with the government, different processes for. I've always been community minded, but exclusively in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. And what's your profession, your work?
Oh, I'm a general building contractor, so design, build, general contract construction. Mm-hmm. So that's given me a lot of experience in a lot of different ranges. We do all sorts of different projects and then interacting with state and federal agencies and then regular business. So I can see firsthand how regulations and affect business and it makes it difficult sometimes if the regulations are too stringent, then it doesn't allow the business to operate in a way, and then it makes it harder to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. So I've lived that. We've lived through a number of downturns, and so it's been tough at times. We go through good times and hard times, but.
Mm-hmm. So you've been getting contracts around the country for your building work?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. We would bid on projects when the market wasn't so good here. It's not, as much fun to be the fifth to eighth bidder, tenth bidder on a job, and they're all your friends. Mm-hmm. Everybody's competing for the same work. So I like to travel. So we would just go and look for work elsewhere and bring money back mm-hmm. instead of, try to pull out of the market here. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of really good experiences doing that.
You mentioned that you've been involved with a lot of nonprofit groups. You want to drop a couple of names there?
People yeah.
Would know? Yeah.
So one of the things I've done is worked with the Foundation for Wildlife Management in helping them create the balance between our wolf populations versus the elk populations. So that was a lot of fun. And also I'm on the Farm Bureau Board, so worked there to help advocate for property rights and farming, agriculture. We're working to try to bring vocational stuff into the schools. So I've also donated time at talked to students on a number of different occasions in classes about the importance of trades and general building contracting in general and designing and how our houses interact with the environment and trying to get some interest into that because we don't have enough young people going into the trades and mm-hmm. it's actually a really good business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah, and they definitely, a lot of builders need help right now. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of good paying jobs yeah. that are available
yeah.
and it's important to, and welding too. We have a fabrication shop, but I don't have enough people to work, so yeah. we just don't. That's not even operating, but if there were people that were wanting to work, they'd have a job.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's a question I'm asking all the candidates. Where are you running, Travis Thompson?
Well, I am running because I I mean, I love this district, and I actually can't stand politics, but it's politics are kind of pitting one group against the other to mediate the middle, and it's about trying to raise money and using issues for your own personal gain, and I can't stand that part of it, but I want the district to be properly represented, free from the groups and special interests that promote their own interests. So I've been, you know, I think this is a job interview, and I've been involved specifically because I wanted to get to know the process and advocate for what it means to live in North Idaho.
Okay. Here's another question I'm asking all the candidates. You know, legislature is typically in session from January until about March or April, but you end up, you know, representing your constituents year round. Mm-hmm. So it raises the question, if you're elected, how much time can you devote to your office on a weekly basis?
I've been donating right now a tremendous amount of time. So I've actually spent an entire session down at the legislature not being elected. Yeah. So I don't have any problem doing that. I can donate as much time as necessary. And if elected, then of course that would be part of my job. But yeah. So that's not a problem. I'm free to move my work schedule around as needed, and that's what I do.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get on to the issues. What do you consider the biggest issues in the House race that you want voters to think about when they decide who they're going to vote for?
Well, I think honesty is the biggest single issue to where we understand actually what's going on, and then we can approach the issues that we have with a full understanding. And that there's a lot of disinformation that goes around, and so generally, if we actually know and we're speaking about the issues as they are, then we're better off. What I see, supply chain issues, inflation, housing, and working people that are available to work, or the skills gap between the jobs that are available and the workers that are there to fill them. So those are the big issues, housing, affordable housing.
Well, how would you tackle housing? That seems to be a pretty tough nut to crack, given that it's influenced so much by the market.
Yeah, it is. It's really difficult. So the one part about housing is to lower the costs, and that's it, and regulation that determines how those houses are built. But one of the biggest things I see is to lower the cost, you need to increase the density, as the land is a big component to the overall cost. And one of the ways to decrease the density or to increase the density is to deal with our wastewater differently. And this is a complicated issues, but these are what I work through. To have more housing units on a piece of ground in the county, not in a municipality, we need to use more of a municipal type system rather than an absorption system for wastewater. That right there will allow us to put on smaller parcels that don't have other purposes. You could put, say, 12 units on a 1 acre parcel, which would be the equivalent of a 60 acres if it was a R5, or 120 acres if it was an R10.
So how do you design that system that it becomes basically a mini sewer system instead of a septic tank situation?
Yes, exactly. And I worked on one that was all the way out in AT2. Like, you can have municipal type systems that aren't tied to a municipality. Our code right now doesn't allow it, but there's a lot of companies that make those types of systems that'll process that wastewater in a way that we can reduce the footprint of the drain system and allow for higher density in the county.
Is that something that the legislature can act on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it is. And it would come from the legislature. I've actually talked to Panhandle Health about it, and they said, hey, we're not at liberty to approve a system like that because it's not part of the statute. And that's how all of these things get built, is through statute. So that's one of the things. And then utilizing the resource that we have in the state, you know, we have a lot of products, and we need to be our best customer. And so working on the regulations that allow us to lower those costs and get the goods from the raw material into the market and to the customer in the most efficient manner possible. Because that's what's driving the cost of housing up is the cost of materials.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned was workforce training and it in relates to education, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. What's your take on the way education is funded in Idaho? Do you think it needs more or it needs to be changed? A lot of local school districts rely heavily on property taxes.
Yeah, I would like, I don't like the property tax, the model is not based on a person's ability to pay. So that's one of the things where if we shifted to a consumption tax, that's a better model overall. And the levy system, that's also difficult because it pits the community against itself when we're trying to fund something that we know we need to fund.
With these supplemental levies.
Supplemental levies, it's just a really difficult thing. And it's on all or nothing. And I don't think that it should work that way. The state, well, the schools were funded more off of the federally controlled lands. So better management there could increase the revenue source and we wouldn't be having to have the conversations about supplemental levies. Plus moving the schools into a state budget versus, you know, the local property tax model we have now.
So a lot of school districts, including Lake Pend Oreille School District, they have some pretty serious infrastructure needs. Buildings are aging. In our district, we have some buildings that are pretty aged now. They've mm-hmm. really outlived their service life and need to be replaced. But the question is, how do we pay for that? It would require, in this district, a new, you know, capital improvement levy. Is that something that the state should be taking more seriously as needing to figure out funding for that for these individual school districts?
Yeah, and I think that needs to be looked at on a school by school and case by case basis so you can see exactly what we need to do and then make decisions. At some point, a building's life expectancy, it's more costly to fix it than it is to replace it. And I understand that dynamic very well. But as from the state side, you know, pulling resource in, and that's where, you know, utilization of the resource that we have in the lands we already own can help dramatically in changing that conversation of how to fund those. And that way, rather than going back to the property tax owners and trying to get that money from them, I definitely like to be part of that conversation because it's important, and we can't just keep putting a Band-Aid on a building that it is past its useful life.
So let's take a look at some of the major work that the legislature did last year. A big topic down there was how were they going to allocate the almost $2 billion budget surplus they have, record budget surplus. And they did a variety of things. They gave a chunk of it back to taxpayers with a $600 million income tax cut, and then they spent another $252 million on infrastructure investments. What was your take with how they decided to distribute that a good piece of that budget surplus?
Well, I think that putting it, the tax breaks, one, you know, was we've got to try to stay within our, we don't need to be taking more taxes than we need. So that component, but then one-time expenditures for income or for infrastructure is important to get those big ticket items out of the way while you have the money. And then it reduces the burden over time that you don't have to increase taxes to do that. So I think that that's where that money should go, not adding to an agency or an increasing a budget that then becomes a burden on future taxpayers.
So generally, those moves were you would have gone along with those if you had been down there.
Yeah, moving it to infrastructure and the tax breaks.
Okay. So we only have time for another question or two here, but politics have gotten more polarizing in recent years. Do you see ways to find common ground among your constituents? And how will you go about representing your constituents that might not have supported you or have different ideas?
Oh, I think that's my biggest strong point, is finding commonality and trying to create win-wins. But his politics is pitting one group against the other to mediate the middle and to create advantages over groups, and that's not what I'm interested in doing. I work to bring everybody to the table and find out what the interests are and then craft something that solves it. Actually solves the problem rather than just feathering the nest of a political candidate or a political campaign.
Okay, last question. What differentiates you as a candidate? Or to ask a different way, why should people vote for you, Travis Thompson?
Well, I've lived here my whole life. I understand our way of life and I understand the district. I've been donating time longer than any of the other candidates have lived here. So, I mean, this is my home. This is not, I don't have a plan B. I mean, I believe that as a community, if we're doing well together, that's good for me. It's good for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm here to represent the district, not any other interests, but specifically the district.
So if people want to find out more about you, do you have a website you can point them to?
Yeah, it's at thompsonforidaho.us. Okay. I have a website, and then you can find me on Facebook as Travis Thompson.
Okay, Travis Thompson, candidate for Idaho Legislature Seat A. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
All right, thank you, Chris.